You're listening to the Corner House podcast. Available to download every month from the Corner House website.
Hello and welcome to the Corner House podcast. I'm Dave Petty, AV technician here at Corner House, and I'll be guiding you through this month's Abandoned Normal Devices special. For the unacquainted, the Abandoned Normal Devices Festival, or AND as it's commonly known, is a regional festival of new cinema, digital culture and art, which takes place annually in Liverpool and Manchester. This year, the festival resumes its Manchester leg, and you can expect a weird and wonderful array of delights, including drive-in cinemas, alt-drag, riot theatre and personal transport experiences, but more on all of those later. First, let's hand the reins over to regular podcast contributor Andy Willis and Corner House Film Programme Manager Rachel Haywood as they discuss some of the film offerings at this year's festival.
We've looked at a sample of the films from the AND Festival, and as you can imagine with AND, they're quite varied and quite different. We've looked at What Is This Film Called Love, Indignados, and we've looked at Piercing One. They're three very different films, but linked in a way, and we'll try and draw out some of those links as we just have a little chat about them. So What Is This Film Called Love is the latest from Mark Cousins. It's quite a step away from his latest, his last kind of magnum opus, his extended What Is Film series, which some people may have seen on TV, which is also played around film festivals across the world. This one's a much shorter film, coming in at about 75, 76 minutes. Rachel, what did you think of it?
It's a really very, very personal film. Some might say self-indulgent, but I don't see that as a bad thing. So being a fan of Mark Cousins, I particularly like this opportunity to get a 77-minute glance into the workings of his brain as he meanders around Mexico.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a good point, I think, because it's not really a film where we can easily sum up the story of the film. As you say, it's more a mediation on life and his feelings at a particular moment in his own life in Mexico City, having travelled around. And it's kind of reflective, I think. And as you say, very, very personal. I might have been able to do without a sequence where he rambles around in the desert naked, but, you know, each to their own. I'm sure some people might enjoy that. But it was, I think, an engaging film, and it takes quite a novel approach to its subject, doesn't it? It's a kind of letter to Sergei Eisenstein, and I'm not spoiling anything, I don't think, by saying that at one point Mark Cousins goes and gets an Eisenstein tattoo on his arm. I mean, that's kind of putting yourself on the line, maybe a bit too much for me in terms of one's art, but there's lots going on in the film. It's short, but I think it's quite a deep film in some ways.
Absolutely. The film kind of meanders from the starting point of Eisenstein and Mark Cousins' love for filmmaking, and kind of becomes a discussion about memory, about happiness, about the joys of just being. Because the film comes about when Mark Cousins is alone in a hotel room trying to do press ups, and he thinks, "What can I do? I'll make a film." He's got 3 days on his own, doesn't really know what he wants to do with his 3 days. He's not very good at doing nothing. So he decides to make a film without a script, without funding, without cast, without a crew, without any kind of constraints. And what we see on screen is his liberation.
Yeah, there's plenty of references to art and to essays and to poems and to literature. He's showing all his kind of knowledge and kind of cultural baggage in the film. I must say, though, one thing I admired about it, it's one of those films, I think, because it's shot in 3 days, purportedly with a budget of £10, it's one of those films, I think, where you might think, oh, I'm sure most people could try and do that. And this is one of those instances where you think, well, most people might think they could do this, but they don't actually get off their backside and do it. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a really good example of that kind of instant filmmaking, where new technology is used to create something very personal and it just gets done. And I think there's lots of people who think they could do it, but it's very much, I think, an admirable thing for Mark Cousins to have actually gone out there and done it himself. And I found it quite an engaging film, if not maybe the greatest film I've ever seen. But for £10, you can't complain too much. Now, one of the things that Mark Cousins does in What Is This Film Called Love is, because he's walking around Mexico City, he comes across at one point one of the Occupy camps, you know, the protests against the bankers and the economic crisis that the bankers have induced across the globe. And that's one of the things that is very, very central to Tony Gatliff's latest film, Indignados, which is a story of a migrant from Africa who enters Europe in Greece, and then it's a kind of picaresque story of her progress across the continent, interspersed with a range of quite abstract scenes that kind of reflect maybe the status of her mind or the status of her being within Europe as a kind of transient person with no real place. Now, I found this film, which, Rachel, we saw in Berlin, didn't we? I found this film a really engaging, kind of immediate film. It was very much, I thought, a response to now and the kind of economic crisis and the instant campaigns against capitalism that kind of sprung up, particularly in countries like Spain. There's an extended sequence in Plaza del Sol in Spain when there was the enormous big occupation of that place. Did you find it as engaging as I did?
I'm a real fan of Tony Gatliff's work, and I think one of, as well as all the elements that you've mentioned about the here and the now and the very kind of freshness of this film, it also picks up on Tony Gatliff's his own concerns about the Roma community as well. So we follow the plight of the Roma across Europe with this film, and it kind of blends the drama of the Occupy movements with the story of the Roma and also with our African immigrant as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's formally as well, I think, a very challenging film, and it's just the sort of thing I would expect to see on the programme at the Ann Festival. You know, it's not an easy watch. It's something to come along, become engaged with and be challenged, I think, both in terms of the content and in terms of the form. And another film which is on in the programme, which kind of picks up on the disaffection of youth within contemporary society, is Piercing One. Now, I have to say, I've never seen before a feature-length animation from the People's Republic of China, so this was one that I was really interested in seeing. And I think I wasn't disappointed. It strikes me as a film that one might think would be suppressed within China, because it's very, very critical of the kind of state and the way in which there's corruption within the state, the police, business, etc., etc. And it follows two young guys who, I think we could say, make some errors in their decision-making process. They decide to do certain things which sends them down the wrong path as the film progresses, and they get themselves in situations they can't get out of. But I found the animation, and I'm not at all a great fan of animation, but I found the animation, for me, not a barrier to what the film was trying to do, which is saying something. How about you, Rachel? What did you think?
I agree with you. Out of the three films that we've looked at for today, this is, for me, the most out-and-out enjoyable of the three. It's by far the easiest watch. I think that the characters, for all their flaws and for all the wrong decisions that they make, are really, really fairly likeable guys, and it paints a really interesting picture of contemporary China.
Yeah, now, one of the things I'm looking forward to is the director, Liu Jian, is coming over for a Q&A after the screening in the Ann Festival, and I'm looking forward to asking him about the kind of distribution of, or the circulation maybe, of this film in China, because I sometimes wonder whether these films that are very critical of authoritarian states that circulate within the film festival circuit are a kind of way in which the establishment is able to say, look how liberal we are. And I'm interested to see what he says about how the film circulated in China itself. So the Q&A is something I think that's a real bonus, because the film, as we've said, is something that's quite different from China, and I'll be really interested to see about listening to the director talk about how he put it together, how he got what are quite critical messages within this film.
If you like the sound of any of those films or want to check out what else is screening at AND, head over to andfestival.org.uk.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available to download every month from the Corner House website.
Over the summer months, AND will be taking to the road with its new touring commission, Mobile Republic, a convoy of interactive caravans. The classic touring caravan is a symbol of the traditional British summer holiday, but these vehicles are far from traditional. Beneath their innocent exteriors, the five caravans have been radically remodelled and reimagined by artists, architects and activists, including London Fieldworks, Helicar and Lewis, the Centre for Genomic Gastronomy, Bureau A and Julian Oliver. Each commission investigates the colliding forces of nature, industry, extinction and a world where future technologies can be sustainable and responsive. On the 10th of August, the caravans made their first stop in Whitehaven, Cumbria. Our roving reporter and programme coordinator Christina Millari reports back from this leg of the journey.
My name's David Gilbert, and I've been creative producer for the Mobile Republic project. We have five caravans, as you've probably noticed, and They're just kind of standard caravans. They're quite old ones as well, which was deliberate, really. We wanted to kind of hark back to the halcyon days of childhood holidays in a caravan off to Wales and that kind of thing. So they have this kind of look of very traditional, old-school seaside holidays and so on. But then we give that a twist. So each of the caravans has been modified in a pretty interesting and all different ways. So we have a cinema. We're sitting in the cinema now in a lovely plush velvet kind of finish. Had a hole cut out the side of it to create quite a large screen so we can have people sitting inside, and it's dark enough we can back project as well and have it as a sort of giant screen, mobile screen.
And we're here right by the seaside today in Whitehaven. Like, how do you think the atmosphere and also the location of the caravans affects the way that people interact with the projects here and also the artists involved?
It's a kind of appropriate place to have them, isn't it? Yeah. I think, I mean, the other aspect of it, though, I suppose, is that the caravan's got this history as quite an anarchic and political thing, both with travelling communities and rave culture in the 80s. And that's kind of reflected in the work that people have done as well, the kind of instability of being someone who doesn't have a mobile home rather than a fixed home. So that kind of tension's really nice, I think, between the kind of homely 1950s jolly hockey sticks seaside holiday kind of thing, you know, on the one hand, and that kind of more political thing on the other, which is about kind of almost the kind of undesirability of people who live in caravans.
Okay. I'm Julian Oliver and my project is Border Bumping.
So could you tell us a little bit about what your project is about here today?
What is my project about? Well, I'm really interested in the cellular communications infrastructure and how much dependency we place upon it, particularly to know where we are in the world. We trust our phones a lot more, I think, than we should. What my project Border Bumping is about is it's looking at the discrepancies between where our phones tell us where we are in the world via the cellular network and where we actually are in the world. So, for instance, one can be on our way to France or on our way to Germany. Say I'm on my way to France from Germany, and 10 or 15 or 20 kilometres before I even hit the border, my phone might associate with a French cell tower and say, welcome to France. At that moment, I take the phone literally and I redraw the border based on what the cellular communications infrastructure tells me about my environment. And so the caravan acts as a kind of a living map as people that are running my little application are crossing borders all around Europe. The map is being deformed, being changed based on these little mistruths.
There's also, I guess, like a sense of paranoia in your work. What would you say to that?
Yes, I think that I wanted to address a little bit this idea that there might be, instead of, I suppose, a white van that's sitting outside people's houses or monitoring actions, this is a grey caravan, you know, so I've sealed off all the windows and made it a little bit like a mobile spy or communications office or something like that. And I definitely wanted to achieve that aesthetic a little bit. I went for a very unstylish, bureaucratic, semi-military kind of a look, I guess. And that is conveyed, I think, when people walk in, at least they express so. But what's really interesting is how everyone that has walked in has had some experience, either of the standing in one country while their phone tells them that they're in another, while simultaneously having a fear that they're being tracked. People are distrusting of these things in their pockets, and some of the conversations around this project are definitely leading quite quickly to that place. We like to think that people just don't care, but I think you'll find if you ask, people do care. They are worried, but they also need their phones.
In a way, it's another type of surveillance. I mean, we think of CCTV cameras and we completely forget that there are these tracking devices on our phones. You've also devised an application that people could download.
That's right, yeah. It's an application where people get to spy on themselves a little bit, you know, as a way of coming into contact with the surveillance infrastructure. People can explore it a little bit on their own by downloading an application that I've written. As they're crossing borders, they can start the application and it will log all their movements as they're crossing the border. And at the point of discrepancy, when they associate with the cellular tower in another country, an SMS is sent to the caravan. And they can actually see it on the map and online. They can see their little event, their little border bump.
My name is Kat Kramer, and
I'm Zach Denfeld, and we're from the Center for Genomic Gastronomy.
And we're here as we've made the SpiceMix supercomputer as part of the Mobile Republic that's touring the north of the UK.
So part of the idea is going through all the possible combinations of spices. So there's millions and millions of combinations, but we've narrowed it down to 25 spices we have on offer, and then the public can come and pick their four favorites and mix them together. And we're combining spices from different parts of the world that aren't usually mixed. So we have spices from East Asia, South Asia, Europe, Africa. And so our hope is to have some new recipes and ingredients, and also to sort of learn more about this specific part of cuisine.
So how do you feel people have reacted to your project today?
It seems like they've been pretty excited to try it out. And everyone's has different strategies for picking their four favorites. Each family member got to choose one of the four. And we've had really crazy combinations and also some pretty standard combinations like cinnamon and nutmeg, for example. Yeah, so it's been a whole range of things, but I think everyone's really excited about it.
Another nice thing that happened today was at least two really young women said they were chefs or wanted to be chefs, and they had really nice recipes they came up with, and that was really exciting. Like, they sort of were into the project, but then really were asking a lot of questions and sharing their cooking interests. That was pretty cool.
So where did the inspiration come from for the SpiceMix computer?
So we've been working for 2 years focusing a lot on food and food issues. And when we were asked to join this Mobile Republic project, we thought of how to make something interesting and mobile and relatively easy to handle when you're on the road. So spices are kind of a low-risk food and therefore be easier with health and safety issues and that kind of thing. And they're also an exciting sort of different way of thinking about food.
I mean, we could mix the Nigella spice with some cinnamon. And if we want, what else is in there? There's thyme as well.
Juniper berry, yeah. Some sumac, some kaffir lime leaves, some cumin.
Yeah.
And another big inspiration was that we were mobile. We're doing this caravan thing. And spices, I think, have a lot to do with travel. I mean, there's this idea of the exotic or the other, and sort of spices that travel far away that can transport your mind to either a real or imagined place. And in a way, this project's like the anti-local food project, because all of these are sourced internationally. They're not local. You can't grow them locally. And so one of the aspects of food that probably will never be localized and will always be global are spices. And that's kind of neat, because we do want to have more robust regional food systems. But we also want to think about what are the things we're going to want to trade and share over long distances, and spices are one of those. So it's sort of this travel theme happening.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast. Available to download every month from the Corner House website.
This month, the What's On guide is dedicated to And. This guide is just an overview, so for the full programme, head over to andfestival.org.uk. On the 29th of August, artist Hey Hey will recreate a personal transport experience on the historic train tracks at Mosey for their project Emblem. Audience members will be invited aboard the Emblem vehicle to experience the antithesis of high-speed travel on a vehicle which is inspired by A.B. Clayton's painting of the inaugural journey of the Liverpool and Manchester Railway in 1830. Later that evening, you can enjoy a movie from a whole new perspective at the Empire Drive-In, a full-scale drive-in movie theatre made from wrecked cars. Film screenings include Robocop, Mad Max 2, and Gravity Was Everywhere back then, which tells the true story of a man who built a house to heal his wife. Here's director Brent Green speaking about the film.
This is Gravity Was Everywhere back then. It's a true story about this guy named Leonard Wood who lived outside of Louisville, Kentucky. And when his wife, Mary, was diagnosed with cancer, he thought he could build their house into a sort of healing machine that would save her life. It didn't work. Mary died, but he kept frantically building it for the next 15 years of his life before he fell off of the roof and he ended up in a nursing home and he had to sell the house to cover the bills. And the guy who bought the house knocked it down because it was the only house in the block that didn't look like every other house in the block. You know, but I got to go down there before it fell. And it was just amazing. Like, from the outside, the house looked relatively normal. It was big and looked pretty well built. But the inside was just randomly chaotically filled up with rooms. Like, he'd be standing in his living room, and the next room over was his bedroom, and it started halfway up the door frame. You'd have to put your hands on the floorboards to hoist yourself up into the bedroom. He had a laundry room with 23-foot high vaulted ceilings. Every stair was numbered, every window was painted a different color. And, you know, he really thought it would work. He really was trying to build this healing machine for Mary, you know.
Famous new media artist Jeremy Bailey returns to Corner House to demonstrate technology that allows him to physically be everywhere at once. Using the master-slave model of communication, where one device or process has unidirectional control over one or more other devices, Jeremy will be able to invigilate the entire AND Festival and beyond from the safety of a protected control cockpit in Liverpool. From the 30th of August, join us at the Slave Docking Station at Corner House and ask our telepresent mastermind how best to navigate your festival experience. On the 31st of August, the documentary Follow screens at Corner House with a post-screening discussion on films that experiment with cross-media and online platforms. Follow charts performance artist Scotty as he becomes obsessed with the elusive Twitter persona of a young American woman who goes by the moniker @SoDamnTrue. The post-screening discussion includes filmmaker Chris Shepherd, Follow director Tim Brunsdon, and artist Paolo Sirio and Mark America. On Saturday 1st of September, faux drag queen Trixie Carr will be fusing alt-drag with fashion, live music, theatre and interactive new media in a riotous performance at Gorilla for her event The Right to Rule. Trixie will be joined by performers and artists Honey Mahogany, Jeremy Bailey, Ultraviolent Violence, the Volkov Commanders and Tranicky. Partying will proceed well into the early hours. That's all from this month's AND special podcast. If this has whetted your appetite, and hopefully it has, check out the full festival programme at andfestival.org.uk. Don't forget to follow AND on Twitter. You can find them @AndFestival or #AND2012.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast. Visit the Corner House website for listings and more.